for sale or rent, the latest trends in Maine real estate. The real estate market in Maine kicked off the year with a bang and has shown no signs of slowing down. Prices are up and inventory is low in many regions of the state. For the most part, it's a seller's market with packed open houses, multiple offers, and quick closings. But even in an active market, getting the most for your home requires a lot more than just putting out a sign. It's important to know what renovations and repairs are likely to see a return in your sale price, how staging and photography can improve the appeal of your property, and how targeted marketing can help you find buyers more quickly. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on Maine Calling, we'll ask two real estate pros about how to sell and how to buy in the current marketplace. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Despite a slight decrease in home sales in Maine last month, the real estate market in the state remains mostly red hot. Today, we're going to discuss strategies for buying or selling a home and get some tips on adding to its value. We'll also hear from a mortgage specialist on what you should keep in mind when applying for a home loan. In the studio with me, Tom Landry. He's a broker and owner of Benchmark Residential and Investment Real Estate. Kate Hills is with us from our Bangor studio. She's a broker with ERA Dawson Bradford Company. And as always, we want to hear from you. Have you recently purchased a home here? If so, how did you find the process? And what advice would you share with our listeners? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Maine Calling Facebook page. Tom Landry, we'll start with you. What adjective would you choose to describe Maine's real estate market right now?
Well, I'm going to, Keith, choose two words, best ever. This is the best time to sell a property ever. On the sales side and on the seller side. On the buyer side, it's a challenging time. It is one filled with the potential of multiple offers on properties very frequently, and one where you don't have a lot of time to decide. You know, it's a kind of a strange thing when it's the biggest financial decision of your life, and it can come down to hours to make that decision without a lot of thought, and every piece of property is unique. So you have situations where buyers have to make decisions right away, often pay over asking, and strip back some of those contingencies that they're used to doing. So best ever in one regard, most challenging ever in the other regard.
And are you talking about the Portland market specifically, or does it radiate beyond?
Keith, that's a great question. You know, we've looked at the data, and you mentioned that the sales reported by the Maine Association of Realtors was down for the month of June, month over month. So what the Maine Association of Realtors does, and it's a wonderful numbers that they provide every month, is they look at year over year, but they look at a month at a time. So they say for 2018 versus 2017, sales are either up or down by a certain percentage. What we did, and really what became really remarkable for us when we did this, is we looked over the trends over a period of time. So if you look back over the first 6 months of this year, right? So really to get a true sense of this, not just month over month, but what does that chunk of time tell us? We did that for this year versus last year, the same time period, and we saw some remarkable changes, not just in Portland, not just on the peninsula of Portland, all these hot walkable markets that we hear all about that people from out of state are buying in. It's really Cumberland County-wide, greater Portland-wide. The more urban areas, clearly, the more walkable areas, even village centers like Yarmouth and downtown Cape Elizabeth, a little bit over some of the more rural areas. But statewide, the market is up no matter where you are.
I did notice with percentages. So Knox County, I noticed where I live, was up significantly, 25%, I think, in terms of the sale price. But we're talking about so few, relatively fewer homes there. So you have to be careful when looking at statistics. It only takes a few high-priced houses, and bang, you're up there.
Yeah. That's a good point about stats, right? You have to be very careful that it's statistically significant, right?
Let's go to the Queen City, and Kate Hills joining us from our Bangor studio. Kate, how would you describe the market in the Bangor area and surrounding areas?
I would say to parallel what Tom said, because he hit the nail right on the head. Ultimately, the one word that I would use to describe the market that we're currently in would be exciting. It's certainly not without its ups and downs, but ultimately, for most people involved, whether buying or selling, or representing either party, I would say it's an exciting time to be involved with this. I mean, there's a lot of movement, there's a lot of quick decisions that have to be made, but it's a good time to invest in real estate. It's certainly a good time to be selling real estate, since, as you can see, across the board in Portland as well as up here in Bangor, sold prices are definitely higher than they were this time last year, which is ultimately the goal, right, in real estate is to make some money off of this. So it is a very exciting time.
So I'm guessing what's driving this is supply and demand, as we learned in Ec 1. But what's behind the supply and the demand, Kate? What's really driving this? What's the story?
Yeah, you know, we're always perhaps a little bit behind Portland, and we definitely heard about the market last year for Portland, and how things were moving very quickly. It was perhaps becoming a seller's market before it ventured this way. So ultimately, low inventory. You are absolutely right, Keith. That is the reason that things are changing. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to prepare for. If you are a seller, getting your ducks in a row ahead of time is ultimately going to benefit you. And I would say the exact same thing for buyers, having things in control, having your finances together. Those are the things that are helpful. And the reason behind it, besides low inventory, I would say, is the increasing interest rates that we're seeing. Perhaps it's causing a little bit of anxiety with people. So if buyers have been on the fence, they're now getting off of it and executing and pulling the trigger, making decisions to actually go ahead and buy. So that's what we're seeing up here in the Bangor market anyway. Mm-hmm.
Tom, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I would agree. There is a sense that these rates are going to keep going higher. And if you have waited, what are you waiting for? Whether that's moving up to a larger home, downsizing, whatever that is, rates have continued to rise over the last 2.5 years. And again, there was a trend to that. So you might as well take advantage of this at this time. The other factor that we find down here, and I think it's spreading throughout the state, is, you know, it's a different Portland. It's a different greater Portland. It's a different Maine, maybe, right? If we can be that bold, than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. We have a tremendous amount of people from larger metropolitan areas around the eastern seaboard coming back to or coming to Maine and experiencing our wonderful lifestyle. So that is fueling some of this low inventory. We also have a shift in the populations as the baby boomers are getting older, largest segment of the population. If you want to look at trends, just figure out where they've gone over the last 50 or so years. And that's where things tend to move. And we're seeing them come in from the suburbs. We're seeing them come in from the countryside. We're seeing those prices go down or not rise as high, right, as the people from the urban areas or maybe these Gen Xers that are starting families or even millennials are replacing them. But these are smaller segments of the population. So we're seeing the greatest rises in values and the least amount of inventory responding to that in our more urban settings.
But so it was only a little over a decade ago that when we were seeing this, we would discover later was a bubble, but that at the time everyone was insisting prices will never go down. This is you've got to get into the market now. I remember talking to one analyst, the sort of the lone voice in the wind, and it was probably in 2007, who said, "Look, there's no supply and demand here. There's no new demand. There's no real demand here. This is speculation." And he was right. How do we know that that's not happening now?
You know, we don't see here, and it's a wonderful question. I think it's a very astute question. We're not seeing the speculation that we see in some other parts of the country. Can those markets affect us? I think maybe globally they could. But here in Portland and I think in Maine, we don't have this, hey, I'm just buying this to have it now. Maybe I'm buying 4 units in a condominium building, or I'm part of this investment group that's coming in and doing a pre-sale only to flip that contract or flip the unit in a year. Are there bubbles? Are there cycles? We have people asking us now, are we at another peak? Is there going to be a burst of this bubble? Nobody knows, obviously. We do see trends of reurbanization continuing. We do not see, in our look at this, that subsiding. We also believe that, as the boomer population maybe wants to cash out of more prosperous markets like Boston and D.C. and New York, they have values that are far superior to us. So we may fall a little bit, but we're going to fall a little more gradually.
Rents, I know, are going up as a side effect of this. Is that another factor in getting maybe more renters into the buying market?
I do think that's the case too, Keith. Folks in Greater Portland have experienced significant rental increases. The rental, as we know, the rental market is very tight, very few rentals. And, if you can move from, the federal government wants us to buy homes, right? They incentivize us to do that with great loan programs. If you think about FHA loans with 2.5% down or 3.5% down, and they're federally insured. So for very little money, you can move from rental into homeownership. And with the average, 2-bedroom in Portland going for $1,750, nothing included, you can sometimes get into buying and owning your own home for less than you pay for rent.
Yeah. Kate, are rents being affected by this hot market in Bangor as well?
We have definitely seen an increase in rental prices where I am. The other really interesting thing that sort of plays a part in all of this, and perhaps a new trend in the last couple of years, again, we're just starting to see it now in the Bangor area, but it's those things like Airbnbs or short-term rentals. Also another great incentive to purchase real estate, to invest in something where perhaps it's not a long-term rental, but you are charging per night or per week. So there's a lot of new things sort of happening in the Bangor area. Prices, like I said, for rentals are definitely affected by all of this. So we're handling that, we're dealing with that, which is something new for us. But ultimately, like Tom said, Maine is protected. It's not to say that there isn't going to be an issue with another bubble, but we tend to, historically, I would say, be a little bit more protected than some of the other bigger areas through across the nation and throughout.
We're going to bring in a call here a little bit early. We'll go to Grace on Peaks Island. Grace, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for having taking my call. I'm curious about the difference in pricing between the Portland market and the Peaks Island market in light of the fact that Peaks Island residents pay Portland taxes.
Tom, you want to feel that?
Grace, I wish I'd singled out Peaks Island. I can do that for you. If you want to contact me, you can go to benchmarkmaine.com, and you can find my contact information there. I did not slice Peaks off from Portland in general. It's not hard to do. We can even look at this as we did, which led to this entire look at the number difference. For different types of properties, whether they be condos, single families, multifamilies. And I'll give you a couple of stats, though, Grace, that I think will talk about the general market. For example, we looked at Cumberland County multifamilies, right? They're up 16% over last year for this first six-month period. And, 16%, you think about it, and you're like, what does that mean? It went from $325,000 median sale price to $377,000. Let me give you another example of that. So you go Cumberland County down to Portland, right? We went in Portland last year, first 6 months, we're at 407,000 for a multifamily on average, right? This year, we're up 25% to $507,000. Think about that, $100,000 jump in your price that you could potentially get for your multifamily. This is staggering.
And this is because of the hot rental market and landlords?
Exactly. Hot rental market. I think people are looking at them as a single-family alternative as well. I can owner-occupy this. It may be the same price. It may be a little bit more, but I'm not floating the entire mortgage myself. We're seeing the same trends also in the single-family and condo market as well.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll entertain more of your questions and comments about the real estate market. The number, of course, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the State Theater in Portland, presenting Courtney Barnett with Julian Baker on July 26th. Tickets available at statetheaterportland.com.
Next time, New Yorker Radio Hour, an evangelical activist who survived domestic abuse says that churches need to do much more to prevent it.
This is a time where our leadership and our pastors might need to repent.
That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock and again Sunday evening at 11 on Maine Public Radio.
A lot of scientists are saying our planet has moved into a new geological epoch, the Anthropocene.
There has never been a species that has been able to affect the planet so broadly and so deeply as humans have.
The age of the Anthropocene and what it means for all the creatures on Earth. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock and again Wednesday evening at 11 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, help navigating Maine's real estate market. Joining me, Tom Landry. He's broker and owner of Benchmark Residential and Investment Real Estate. And joining us from our Bangor studio is Kate Hills. She's a broker with ERA Dawson Bradford Company. We invite you to take part in our conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Julie Marquis. She's president and CEO of Five County Credit Union. Julie, welcome to Maine Calling.
Oh, thank you, Keith. Thanks for having me on.
So the Federal Reserve just raised the federal funds rate. What does that mean for those who are looking at getting a mortgage?
I think overall mortgage rates are still fairly low. And like Kate and Tom have said, it's quite an exciting time for people to be able to purchase and get into a home, especially with rents escalating as they have.
So what would be your first piece of advice then for a first-time home buyer wanting a mortgage?
Oh, yes. Very exciting time for a first-time home buyer, but I would caution them to do their homework, research, and probably familiarize yourself ahead of time with different mortgage types and products and programs that are out there. They want to make sure that they find a lender that they're going to be compatible with that is very responsive to the needs and what they're looking for. There's plenty of products out there, but they really want to make sure that they have a good partnership with a lender, and trust is another big component there. Plenty of lenders with a lot of knowledge. You want to make sure you're not getting into something that you can't afford. And really, communication is the key. They need to make sure they ask all their questions because obtaining a mortgage can be pretty complicated and a stressful time in someone's life.
Mm-hmm. What if your credit isn't all that great?
Depending on your score, you may have a little bit of work that you need to do. Typically, you do need a fairly marginal credit score to obtain a mortgage. In the event that you don't have the best credit, most lenders can work with you and lay out a roadmap as to what you may need to do to work on your credit and give you options on how to improve your credit. And it may take some time to clear up your credit report because that is a big component of getting a mortgage. So there may be waiting involved, but again, that relationship with your lender and communication will help you down the road. And also, you need to make sure you've got that saving for a down payment.
What if you, let's say you wanted to borrow against the value of your home with a HELOC to do improvements? That's a home equity line of credit. What would you advise there?
Absolutely. A home equity line of credit is a great product that homeowners can use to do those renovations or repairs after they've been in the home for a while. Maybe it's the kids have been bugging you for a pool and you need to figure out a way to borrow for that. Using the home equity line of credit would be a great product. Lenders can normally find you a very flexible product, and there may be tax deductions. However, you always want to consult with your tax advisor on that.
All right, Julie, thanks very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Julie Marquis is president and CEO of Five County Credit Union. Let's get to some advice for, let's start with, we were talking there about potential buyers, but let's talk about sellers, first of all. It's a seller's market, as we've been noting. Tom, any, I guess, step number one, if you're trying to sell your house in a hot market, pricing.
Yeah, Keith, absolutely. And you know, on the way in, I'm out in the lobby, and we're just chatting with a few of the staff members here, and the idea or the conversation turned to, do you even need a realtor? Can't I just write for sale on a paper plate and have five offers? And I think now more than ever, I'm not just trying to sell our services. Now more than ever, I think there's pitfalls to this because there is a limit. Even if a buyer is coming from Brooklyn, New York, where they sold their $3 million home, they're going to buy in your market. Now, we can boost the price a little bit. We can go a little higher on the list price, but there is a sweet spot there. And an informed local realtor, member of the Maine Association of Realtors, is a critical person to help you with that. And they should be somebody who does volume in your neighborhood. They should be somebody who's you see their signs. You can ask them for their stats. So that's rule number one. The other part is you know, don't believe a little bit of the hype, right? Again, there's a limit here, and we are seeing, and I just did this with somebody, Keith, last night, where we looked at some of the inventory and we saw a whole bunch of properties that were listed and went sale over asking. They were listed probably a little bit more reasonably, maybe a little lower on that price continuum. They went under contract in a number of days. If you're not under contract, and let me just sort of say this point blank, if you're not under contract in this market, in 2 weeks, you've done something wrong. Mm. So that usually means underpricing it a little bit, generating that multiple offer situation potentially, and then selling for over asking. We also see a bunch of folks, like I said, with the people last night that I did this with, that started higher, took multiple price drops. And so you're seeing this parallel, people that start reasonable, sell over asking, and experience great things in the market, and then people who go too high, believe the hype a little too much, and end up chasing the market down.
And the danger of leaving your house on the market too long is a signal to buyers that there's something wrong there.
Exactly. Even if they love the home, they are looking at it. They start to say, well, what's wrong with it? What am I missing? So I think it begins a negative sort of loop there where you end up having to take multiple price drops. And it is very nuanced there. I mean, where you go on that continuum, you need an outside person to separate your heart because you love your house and your wallet, right? Because you're just too close to it as a seller. You need this professional.
Kate, what about renovations? Are there any sort of typical renovations that pay off, that you get your money back for and more in the sale price, and some that aren't worth doing?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something that I talk a lot about with sellers, because obviously it's a question that they're always asking. What can I do to improve the price, get a higher price, and walk away with a little bit more? So the two big ones, and I'm sure Tom can talk a little bit more about this too because of his background, but ultimately your biggest return on investment is going to be in your kitchen and in your bathrooms. So that's really where the focus ought to be. That's what buyers are looking for. I mean, they want the kitchen is usually the place where people are hanging out, especially with an open concept type of home, which we're seeing a lot of course. they want nice finishes. They want it nicely appointed. So that's where you're going to see the ROI. And then the same can be said for bathrooms too. But ultimately, and we've talked a little bit about this, you know, just a well-staged home. People are going to they're going to see that. They're going to recognize that. In fact, the other day I showed a buyer a property. It was a staged home. It was a staged condo, in fact, and it was absolutely gorgeous. Right, no one was living there, so of course there's no dog hair or whatnot, no kid toys, things like that. It was really nicely done. And then we went into the property next door, still equally as nice, but it hadn't been staged. And in fact, the homeowner wasn't actually expecting us. It was a condo situation, and we said that was like eating dessert first, right? Mm. I mean, it was. We saw this beautiful staged property. So it's important for sellers to really take notice and heed that advice. It ultimately is going to make a world of difference.
Now, how much is staging? I mean, how much would it cost you to stage a home prior to sale?
Yeah. Well, that, of course, will vary by area as well as the agency or the individual doing it. But it can also be as simple as just changing the furniture so there is a better flow in the house. So play around with it. If you're thinking about putting your house on the market, do those things. Move the love seat, you know, change the position of the TV or whatnot. And so I think that in our area, we are seeing that staging is something affordable. And of course, that is a relative term, I suppose. But, you know, it's definitely something to look into. I don't think it's so far out of reach, which perhaps once was the stigma with staging. So it's definitely worth looking into, but play around with it yourself. It would be my advice to any seller.
And back to kitchens and bathrooms. These are also, though, the most expensive rooms in the house. How is there a danger of overdoing a kitchen, say, in a house that's not going to be not going to get you the money back?
Yeah, Keith, I totally agree. And I agree with Kate that those are the two areas, and they're very tough for people. If we think about 50% of our buyers in some markets coming from away, for those people to take on those improvements, I think there are common sense things that you can change in them, like faucets and maybe a countertop and maybe put that undermount sink in versus the Formica countertops and those things. Maybe you change out some of the appliances. However, you nailed it. It's what we're typically telling folks is, remove distractions. That's really you as a seller. Let's not make capital improvements. Let's not gut that kitchen. Let's not even probably even do those countertops, which, are, you know, if you do granite countertops, it's $5,000-$6,000. Typically, for me, it's the low-hanging fruit. Paint, removing some wallpaper, changing some old dated light fixtures. It's this light, if you want to call it staging things, you want to call it house prep prior to pictures. We consider, and what we talk to sellers about, is when you do the photographs, that's showtime. Do as much as you can. Pretend somebody very important to you is coming over, is going to give you a lot of money, like a wealthy relative. And that's really what we're talking about, getting it ready for those type of things and removing distractions.
All right. Let's go to Emily in Arundel. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually a builder, and we're focused on super efficient green construction in the Arundel area. And my question is, how have your panelists seen increased construction materials costs affecting real estate prices? And along with that, I'd like to just mention that you know, not all houses are created equal, and I would encourage buyers to consider long-term utilities and maintenance costs when making a decision to purchase a home. It's also a great opportunity to decrease your personal carbon footprint.
Yeah,
Emily, I would agree with you. That's a great point. You know, we certainly are seeing the increased materials cost drive up the cost of properties. If you think about the amount of new construction that's going on in Portland with the condo boom that's happening, you're seeing prices correspond with that. Sellers are having to charge more. Of course, you also have developers buying properties that are more. So it is this idea of, well, that's wonderful. It's a free market. That lot that I bought for $50,000 is now worth $450,000 on the East End, which I should be able to participate in and take advantage of. But now my cost, if I'm thinking that I could build price per square foot in say Portland for $250 or $300 a square foot, maybe now it's $325, $400. It does move the prices up. We are seeing then creep out of these areas as well. So places like around here, Deering Center, Woodford's, other areas becoming a little more popular and people moving into them and maybe developing in them as well.
Yeah. Kate, any thoughts to add?
Yeah, no, I think Tom is absolutely right. And I know that he has quite an extensive background in this, too, in construction and new builds, things like that. So he hit the nail right on the head. No pun intended.
All right. Emily, thank you very much. The number again, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Lisa on Facebook writes, I'm in a unique position in York County trying to sell and buy at the same time, because it would be a contingent upon finding a place. My sale is going to be tough, or so I've been told. This is very common. You've got a property in a hot market, which is great. You can sell it, but then you have to go and buy one, and you can't hold two mortgages at the same time.
Yeah, Keith, it's very difficult. It's a stressful situation. Sometimes people feel paralyzed there, right? How do I do this? You know, the best thing to probably do in my mind is to start to go out and look. Don't fall in love, right? But go out with a realtor, go look at properties and see if the property that you would want is out there before you start this process. And then, you know, whether have that realtor come back, like Kate was saying, and she spoke well about this, is have that person come back and advise you on your home and what you need to do to get it ready for sale. So over the course of however many weeks or months it takes you to do that, once you get ready to do that process, you're going to be in a situation where you have a product that's ready to list. But, you know, there are techniques here which we typically tell folks to decouple these two things. It's very difficult for a buyer to come in contingent. So if in a hot market I'm a seller, and I know that I may have multiple offers on a property, the last offer I'm going to accept, the one that I will not accept, is somebody that has a house that's contingent on selling. I'm going to go with somebody who doesn't have that, even if the price is lower. So what we would advise Lisa to do is get her house ready, sell her house, and then start looking. And what we've done recently, Keith, it's kind of interesting here, and it's surprising, is in those hot markets, we can even say to a buyer, if we're selling somebody's home, the seller wants to rent back for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months even after closing. So what Lisa could be able to do is, you know, sell that property. She's got her cash now. She's no longer a contingent seller at that point, a contingent buyer. She's got her time to look for her next house, because we don't want to rush that process and find our next 20-year house in 2 weeks if it's not on the market. And if it doesn't happen at the end of that 6 months, she can rent. And you're further decoupling those two things, so you become a very attractive buyer for that new seller.
1-800-399-3566. Back to the renovations, we've talked about bathrooms and kitchens, but the first impression of a house is when you pull up in front of it, right? How much attention and money might you put into curb appeal, landscaping, et cetera? Tom, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I believe at the end of this, it really is about removing distractions. So I don't like to have my sellers really put in any more money than they can feel they can get back for probably $2 or $3. So you put in a dollar, I want you to get $3 back on that. So typically on the outside, we're talking about edging beds, flower beds, those things, mulching them, mowing lawns, touching up paint, putting in that new mailbox, putting in the new doormats and at an entry level, but not really doing some major improvements to those things. You know, some people will ask about, should I put in a paver driveway, you know, and it's boy, yeah, that could be $10,000 to $15,000. It looks beautiful, but is somebody going to pay you that that kind of money over that? No, I would put that into something else. I'd put it inside the house and not spend a tremendous amount on landscaping.
Have you ever seen just a really big mistake in this area? Someone just overspent on a project that was never going to get them a return?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that. I went into a property, and I think sometimes people think, you know, I don't need to involve the realtor until afterwards, and I think that's a mistake. So as you own a house, I think we should all be thinking about resale, even if we think we're going to be carried out in the pine box, and I've literally had people say that to me. But, you know, sometimes life changes. You know, your kids out in California have grandkids, you have grandkids now, and you move out there, and you didn't expect that. You have to think about these things, in my opinion, as you're doing any type of renovation. So the example I'll give you is a property in Portland. It's a 4,000-square-foot property, and they made it into a one-bedroom. Now, it was beautiful. It was 4,000 square feet in a one-bedroom. It was a very difficult sale. I think if they had some advice along the way from somebody who may have to sell that, it would have been a different outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kate, any experiences along that line?
Yeah, I think that if you have the ability to look at this from a 30,000-foot view, it tends to make decision-making a little bit easier. So the first thing that I would say is you sort of want to, of course, look at what similar homes are selling for. So the worst thing you could do is take a home where in this market perhaps it's only selling for $210,000, but putting in those types of finishes that ultimately you're going to want maybe closer to $300,000 for it. It's not going to happen. So being realistic about some of those things would be step one. The other thing that I tend to talk to sellers about is being aware of doing things that are too trendy, right? I mean, we've seen the trends with granite countertops. They're lovely. It's great. Eventually, like anything, that's going to change. And so it's not to say not to do it, but it's to be aware of what you're looking to get down the road. And the crazy thing about this life is in 10 years, you know, 10 years goes by like in a blink of an eye, it seems. And so I had done some renovations to my own house, and I can't believe it's already, we're closing in on a decade already, and I'm thinking, gosh, it's time to do it again, right? So being really aware of those types of things and seeing it from a 30,000-foot view can be tremendously helpful.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll come back more of your questions and comments about Maine's real estate market. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Ocean View at Falmouth, proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow beginning at 1 p.m. on Maine Public Classical.
How can a rural town in Maine convince its graduating seniors to return?
With their ambitions, with their experiences. If we can figure that out, I think it'll be a renaissance for Rumford, Maine.
Also, how is Vermont attracting young workers who are supposed to love the hustle of urban life?
But maybe we're a little closer to nowhere in a kind of comfortable way.
Join us for Next from the New England News Collaborative.
Stay with us for Next this afternoon at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. It's Friday, the end of the week, but the news doesn't stop on the weekends. In addition to radio programs like BBC NewsHour and Weekend All Things Considered, you can turn to Maine Public Television for the PBS NewsHour, too. The PBS NewsHour weekend airs on both Saturday and Sunday evenings at 6:30. It's the same valued program we watch each weeknight at 7, just in a half-hour weekend version. That's the PBS NewsHour weekend at 6:30 on Saturday and Sunday evenings on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, tips on what to do if you're looking to buy or sell your home. Joining me, Tom Landry. He's with Benchmark Residential and Investment Real Estate. And Kate Hills is with ERA Dawson Bradford Company. Join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. Here in our last few minutes of the program, we want to get to tips for buyers. Tom, we'll start with you. What's step number one in this market?
So step number one is to, again, walk around with somebody who's a qualified local agent. I do believe that's critical. When a seller in their realtor is faced with multiple offers, oftentimes they'll look at that. Who is this person walking around with advising them? And if there's somebody that that listing agent knows, I think your chances of that offer being accepted goes up. The other point is the other one is you can offer what the home is worth, not necessarily what it's listed for. Now, keep in mind, buyers, you know, at a certain point, you'll be out there. You'll go out over the course of maybe 2 or 3 weeks. You'll start to learn the inventory. You will become very informed about where things are priced at. And where ultimately they're selling for. So don't get fixated on what it's listed for. Offer what it's worth, even if that's over the asking price and even if it's over significantly.
Should that be your first bid? Should you offer something that's sort of close to what you think it's worth?
You bet. I don't think you have another opportunity. It isn't like this back and forth of days of old, Keith. You know, there's a cadence here now, and the cadence is offer your best offer right up front. Consider sweetening the pot, too. How about no inspections? It's controversial, but if you want that house and the seller's not going to come down anyways if you find something wrong with it, why don't eliminate that? Now, there's other things you can do. You can write a letter. Handwritten is probably the most effective, so it doesn't look like something that's canned that you have ready to go. Include your picture of you, your significant other, your pets, your family, whatever that is. These things are meaningful, right? Compliment that seller on the house, the renovations, et cetera.
Yeah. Kate, anything to add for advice to buyers?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say to parallel that, getting your finances in order, we did touch upon that a little bit. But knowing the loan program that you have, knowing what kind of house you should be looking for. There are a lot of variables with different financing options. So talk to your lender, talk to your real estate agent, know what that looks like. And of course, just the pre-approval is going to be incredibly helpful, right? You need to know what your price range looks like. You have to be ready to go so that when and if your offer is accepted, you're on to the next step. Because ultimately, there's not a whole lot of time to be messing around with that.
Sure. We have a couple of notes from listeners noting that there's pushback against Airbnb rentals in some markets in Maine. And they're asking, is that a trend that buyers should be mindful of?
I think there is pushback. Some communities have set caps. Portland has, and some communities have outlawed the Airbnb allowing to. So I do think it's a word of caution. If you're thinking as a multifamily owner in maybe a desirable spot, let's just toss out Willard Beach or something like that, where people can do these weekly rentals or weekend rentals, and you're banking on doing that going forward, and you may be paying top price for that multifamily or that property with the expectation of doing that, I would be cautious.
Mm-hmm. Great. Let's see if we can take one quick call, literally very quickly, from Melissa in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the program.
Hi, guys.
What's your question real quickly, please?
I wanted to ask both Kate and Tom. My husband and I are thinking about buying a camp. So I want to ask them both, what did even their area would bring to our life, like, you know, just coming up to Maine to travel, you know, from Florida? Like, what would Southern Maine do for us, and what would, like, the Bangor area do for us?
You each get 30 seconds to sell your region. Tom, go.
This is great. So I think our area would provide you with great access to the mountains, whether that's western Maine or in the North Conway, White Mountains area. I think you have tremendous amount of lake experiences here in the lakes region. You also are close to Maine's biggest city. It's a fabulous city. We've got a great airport. It's and you also have, of course, the ocean. So you have both of those things very close.
Kate, make your pitch.
Naturally, I would say almost the opposite. Going a little bit further north, you can get away from the hustle and the bustle. I know that Tampa has a lot going on, a lot of good stuff happening. But to come up perhaps a little bit more of a rural location to relax and get away is ultimately, I think, the goal and perhaps why Maine is called vacation land after all.
All right, Melissa, you have your pitches there, and best of luck in finding a property. We'll welcome you to Maine. Kate, Tom, with that, we're out of time. Appreciate it. Thanks very much once again. Kate Hills, a broker with ERA Dawson Bradford Company, Tom Landry, a broker owner at Benchmark Residential and Investment Real Estate and Cornerstone Building and Restoration. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. You can find links to all of our past programs as well as additional resources on our website, maincalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 7 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.